G'day, I'm Eck. Welcome to ECPOD episode 450, Dateline Sydney, Australia, the 30th of December 2013. And it feels very, very strange because I'm actually in the Channel ERK studio recording ECPOD instead of in my car. And I also have a special guest. Identify yourself, special guest.
Hi, ERKPOD, it's me.
Let me turn that off. Identify yourself again.
Got really dramatic right there. That was kind of interesting.
Identify yourself again, guest.
Hi, ERKPOD listeners. It's me, Sean, from California.
And how is the weather in Sean A. California land?
It is wonderful. A lot of nice, sunny, 70 degree. Of course, that's Fahrenheit days this week. Which I will never complain about in late December, as I'm originally from a part of the country that actually has winter. So, it's all good.
And, of course, what would it be like in Chicago at the moment or thereabouts if you were there right now?
Well, it would certainly be a lot colder. It could really vary anywhere from... anywhere from, say, maybe 30 degrees Fahrenheit all the way down to probably negative 20, depending on the conditions. And, of course, ice and or snow would be a constant thing. So this is much improved over that where I am now.
Absolutely. And I was going to say something that I haven't said for a long time, but... it's ERKPOD. It's all ERK all the time, but I've got you as my guest, and it's been so long since I've actually said that.
It has. Well, kind of by default, ERK, it's been you all the time on ERKPOD, so you haven't really needed to bring the old ERKPOD slogan out for a while.
But I thought it's a special occasion. It's 450 episodes, and you basically invited yourself, so it was all good.
Well, you put it out on your show a while back, and you said, well, I'm thinking about getting some wrangling in some guests for 450. And right now, I have the time, so I figured, why not?
And I thought it couldn't be episode 450 without you, Sean.
Yeah, I mean, what's more special than 450?
500?
Maybe. Well, I mean, if you're just going to apply the filter of higher numbers, then technically 451, 452, etc., they're all more special than 450.
Now, of course, it's a couple of days before I fly on a jet plane over to America, and Sean O and I will briefly be in the same time zone. How freaky is that going to be?
Well, I mean... it wasn't, I mean, all things considered, it wasn't that long ago that we were in the same time zone, it feels. I mean, compared to the last time, there was about a four-year difference, and now it's only going to be about a year. So now it's just normal. It's just like, oh, ERK never left.
And, of course, in a way, ERK didn't really leave because it took me so long to get the episodes out from when I was in America the last time.
Yeah, I'm not sure how long ago it was that those stopped, but I know it was well into 2013 before you were finally finished publishing all that audio.
Yeah, it was about October, because what happened for listeners who aren't aware, and I'm sure all of you who have been listening for a while are aware, I went to America in January and February 2013. Didn't actually do any audio editing or anything. I just did a lot of recording when I was there and then gradually brought out episodes. And didn't I record a shitload of material, Sean?
Yeah, you had a lot of stuff. There's no doubt about that.
So, of course, not only did you get to meet me and, you know, hang out and do all the sort of stuff that we normally do when we were together, you also got to hear all the little audio boo messages that I did as I was traveling around then you got to hear some of the stories firsthand, and then, of course, you heard all of the extended stuff that I put out later. How did you find all that?
Well, the audio booths were cool. I missed... I'm not sure what happened. You know, Audio Boo is a weird service in that, unlike a lot of these other services where you sign up, you add people, etc., with Audio Boo, since its final product is ostensibly audio podcasts, they actually give you a subscribable RSS feed that you can then, well, subscribe to. In my case, I use iTunes, though certainly you could use any aggregator you wanted to. And I didn't realize until you were a few weeks into your trip that I wasn't... I think what had happened is I'd accidentally deleted the feed from my iTunes, because I kind of remember at some point early last year I accidentally deleted a feed, and I couldn't figure out what it was. So I resubscribed. I picked up from that point onward, and just kind of listened as you were going along. And then after you got back, you did compilation episodes of all your audio booths, so I got to hear the ones I missed, which was cool. And then, of course, when you were here, we had plenty of conversations. So I heard, as you said, I heard those stories firsthand, and then, you know, I heard the raw audio, as it were, later. So... it was good. It was, you know, it was cool hearing the finished episodes later, because it really put some of those other stories, you know, a little more in perspective. And it's like, okay, you know, before I got kind of the condensed version, but now I get to hear the whole thing.
Because that's the thing with AudioBoo, for those who aren't aware, and I will be using AudioBoos again while I'm overseas. So if you just click on the link on like a Facebook update or a Twitter update, you'll be able to hear it. It's basically a 5-minute snippet in time. And so instead of me talking for an hour on the New York subway system, for instance, or wherever I happen to be, it was just a short 5-minute just to check in, just to say, hi everyone, I'm Erk and I'm at wherever I am. And you can, as you said, Shauna, you can listen to the other stuff in more detail when I came back.
Yep, indeed.
So this year, in case people haven't heard where I'm actually going, I'm heading up to New Media Expo, and unfortunately, Shauno, at this stage, I'm not really excited about New Media Expo.
Yeah, you know, it's funny with NMX. I contemplated for a hard... 5 minutes last week, seeing if there was any way I could go, because as I alluded to earlier, I have the time that wasn't really anticipated that long ago, but I have the time now, and I just kind of started looking at it. Okay, well, what would it cost for me to go? And I just kind of decided that I don't really have the financial resources. It's not an event that you can just go to. You do have to pay for a ticket, and there are tiers of admission. It's funny, I actually posted on Twitter that, you know, I was considering it, and I tagged the New Media Expo Twitter account, and they came back and offered me a 20% off promo code, which was, you know, fair enough, I guess, but the 20% off the ticket's not going to be enough to really make the difference for me to be able to go. You know, I don't know. I think at some point in my life I will probably attend one of these, but I feel like it's not... I mean, I'm kind of like you in that I feel like I would want to be a little more excited about it. And I think probably the best way to tackle something like NMX is keep your expectations low and just go and enjoy it for what it is. And, you know, you'll be fine. I mean, I get the impression that a lot of people go to this thing as kind of a businessy / networky kind of thing, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. But it's not something to, I don't know, it just, yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of losing my train of thought here, but I mean, I'm kind of with you in that I feel like if I were more excited about it, I would probably work a little harder to try and figure out a way to go, scrape up the money. But I just feel like at this point, unless a whole lot of money were to fall out of the sky for me, I'll wait and do it, you know, in 2015. Sorry, I had to do the math. It's so weird with NMX because it happens right at the beginning of the year, and that was another thing. It's the first weekend of January, so I thought it was closer to the end of the month, and then I thought, okay, well, I might have enough time to maybe work something out, but it's so close to the beginning of the year. It's weird. My brain hasn't flipped over yet the calendar into 2014, so I had to think for a minute there. But yeah, 2015 is maybe a little more likely, depending on how things transpire for me in the next year.
Now, I'm sure that it's going to be a great event, and I'm sure that I'm going to have a great time, and I'm going to meet a lot of people that I've heard of and that I've listened to, and probably a whole heap that I haven't. But I think you could be right. I'm sort of setting my expectations low. I'm not really preparing for it, so to speak.
Yeah, and I really think that's, I mean, honestly, that's a good philosophy for life in general. But really, you know, this whole New Media Expo thing grew out of, there used to be a thing called a podcast expo. I believe they did two of them. One was in 2005 and one was in 2006. And the first one was actually here in California. It was in Ontario, which is near Los Angeles. And I wasn't living in California at the time, but that's not important. And those first couple of years would have been a lot of fun to attend because back then, most people who were podcasting were doing it because it was new, it was exciting, and they really loved the medium and or the craft, if you will, of podcasting. And then the guys that ran the podcast expo sold it to Blog World, and I think over the next couple of years the podcasting part of Blog World really got deprecated, and the focus was a lot more on the blogging side, and a lot of people who were creating new media outside of blogging kind of went, look, you guys, you're giving us nothing, and we're not going to come back. So they bared down and refocused, and now it's New Media Expo, and it's supposed to, from what I understand, you know, have all these elements. It's going to have the podcasting stuff, the blogging stuff, and all that. At least I think so. Maybe I'm wrong. But, you know, in the early days, it would have been fun to go because, again, we're looking at, you know, the idea of podcasting as a business proposition was really not even in the forefront of people's minds, and that's not really the case anymore. That's not to say that there aren't a lot of people out there who are making pods just for the fun of it, or at least not as a goal to become a revenue source, but that's definitely changed a lot, and I think that you're going to run into, you know, a lot of these panels and stuff with people talking about maximizing your metrics and, you know, understanding your analytics and finding sponsors and all that kind of stuff, which is fine, but you can only do that for so long. But I think if I went, I would probably go to some of those things, but I would focus a lot more on just meeting people and you know, just trying to have a good time and enjoying it for what it is.
There is a actual podcasting track that's being coordinated by Cliff Ravenscraft, the podcast Answer Man. So you could just go for the podcasting bit and then use the other time to network, and that's probably what I'll do. For me, being an Australian, I'm at a disadvantage when it comes to things because podcasting isn't as big here. I don't know as many podcasters here, so to get a room full of podcasters for me is going to be great. But when it comes to monetizing, a lot of the things only apply to America, and you know, if your audience is outside of America or the podcasters outside of America, it ain't going to happen.
Well, and you know, in general, this is the part about making money through podcasting that I think a lot of people don't understand. And for someone who hasn't really made any money through podcasting, I know a lot more about this than I probably should. But the truth is that you won't really monetize in the ways that are traditionally considered by people when they think of monetizing a podcast, unless you have a substantially large audience. And you know, I'm talking about like you're getting consistently, you know, 10,000 unique downloads a month. You know, if you cross over into that threshold, you could start making enough money through some of the more standard podcast advertising services, Raw Voice, Podtrac, etc. Of course, provided your show is clean, because they tend to shy away from shows that carry an explicit tag. But you might be able to make enough money if you're getting 10,000 uniques a month. You might be able to make enough money through them to feel like it's worthwhile. But if you're doing anything less than that, you know, you're just not going to make it enough money, in my opinion, to really make it worthwhile. And I feel like if you're making podcasts, you know, there's nothing wrong with doing anything with the consideration that you'd like to make money off of it, but getting into podcasting specifically for that purpose is a really bad idea. You can invest your time and your energy into so many other things that require probably less time, energy, and money to get started that'll reap you a faster return in terms of overall cash. you know, but there's a lot of people who don't really understand that, and that's where, you know, things like this, you know, this expo coming in, people can learn that, I guess. You know, again, if I were going to go, you know, I'd probably go to some of those things, and, you know, if I saw any panels that looked particularly interesting to me, I'd probably go to them. But I think that the real benefit would be to just meet some people, because I do know, like you, Eric, I know a lot of people through podcasting, and very few of them I've really ever met or talked to. And certainly, I mean, yes, I am in America, whereas you're in Australia, but you know, I've never been in a room full of podcasters either, so it's not as common an event as I think it used to be.
What money value could you put on, say, how we met up earlier in the year? You can't.
No, you can't. But I also think that, you know, in our case, I don't know, Eric, I think that we're really part of a wave or a breed of podcasters that are becoming more and more, I hate to use the word extinct, but you know, there's less and less people out there who do this sheerly out of an enjoyment of it. And indeed, I mean, we formed a friendship because of this medium, and that's fantastic. And yeah, you can't put a price on that. But, you know, I think that now more and more people, you know, they do kind of look at this at least as much from the, you know, the networking side of, you know, well, I'll meet somebody and down the road, you know, I can do something for them or they can do something for me. And there's nothing wrong with that. But, you know, it's one of those things. You can get into this for the sheer enjoyment of it, and if that's enough, that's fine. And you know, if you want to try and make more out of it, well, that's, you know, that's great too. But I think in the end, there's perhaps less people at this point who are really into it just for the sheer enjoyment of, you know, producing and publishing a podcast, whether that's audio, video, whatever it is, than, you know, there was when you and I first met anyway.
So, speaking of sheer enjoyment, what's been going on with your podcast? I haven't heard your voice lately, mate. What's going on?
Well, we moved our server. We moved to a new web host because our web host kind of sucked, and I was getting tired of it. So, and when you have a very, very large WordPress site, it is not as easy to move as the purveyors of WordPress would like to make you believe. So we moved the site over, and I you know, put in a new theme, which required a bunch of new work. And we're still kind of resurrecting some content from the site that some of it was just kind of lost in the move. Some of it, when we switched everything over to the new host, we set everything to draft, and Jen's kind of been going through some of the older stuff and seeing, you know, do we still need to keep this? And because we had merged all of our blogging and podcasting projects into one site that included the podcast, and we had had a discussion before then, kind of about, well, what are we doing with podcasts? What do we want to do with podcasts? And we kind of made some decisions, and, you know, we're going to be, you will definitely hear from us again in the new year, and there is stuff in the works already. But it's still a little ways away. I'm hoping for sure we'll be back up and running by the time, Irk, that you're here to visit us. And I will go as far as to say this. We will not be podcasting anymore through the No Market website. So if anybody subscribed to that feed, you can delete it. But we will be back with another podcast, and that's all I'm really gonna say at this moment. I've gotten the artwork done, and now I just need to get the website online and do a few other things. And I mean, content-wise, no, it's not gonna be dramatically different than anything that you've heard from us in the past. I just felt like the No Market Radio podcast was not really, it was weak. It was too many episodes of me kind of throwing on the microphone and complaining about money. At the time when I made the decision to stop doing that and we moved the website and everything, I had this notion that maybe, you know, I would start the new year with a new job that would like pay me a living wage and have benefits and all that, and that's not really what happened. So my money situation is still as screwed up as it was back then, but I wanted to get away from that, and Jen and I had some conversations about, you know, we went through a real long period with Gemini Dragon where Jen was working every day, and I couldn't really bother her to do a podcast with me when she was working every day, and she's working a lot less now. And I said, you know, I don't want to go forward with this if you're not going to commit to doing the show with me on a regular basis. And she said she would. So, you know, that is the story really up to this point. And Jen has also said that she wants to bring her podcast Inside My Head back. That's no date on any of this, but I'm confident will happen sometime in 2014.
Awesome. That is good news, because you know we interact often, but actually hearing your voice, it's been a while.
Yeah, I know, and I am I do apologize for that, and I know I've had at least one other person contact me and go, "Hey, what's going on?" But I promise what we have planned, I think will make a lot of people happy, and we've committed to making sure that we can find a schedule where we can, Jen and I can do it together. We can do it on a regular basis and really get back into it, because I do miss it. And, I want to do it, but we had to first focus on getting all the other content back in line and at the very least getting the other website up and, cranking out, and it is now, so that's good. And for that matter, nomarket.org will continue to exist, and it's not going anywhere. It's just the new podcast is going to be broken out of that and will have its own domain and its own website. So it will be hopefully in the next couple weeks you'll be hearing us again.
I was listening back to the No Market episode that the three of us did together when I was in Slow earlier this year. And I remember your Colin impersonation from Ouroboros, and he'd probably just say, "Well, yeah, it's just going to be hyper nonsense, you know, Mark 3."
Well, yeah. Well, yes. And what's going to happen? Those comments will be made, and in this case, they may carry a little more weight than they did in the past. I won't say anything else, but I get it. I guess I had to go through some things, and I just kind of thought, No Market Radio doesn't sound like anything as a show title. It doesn't really, it's not very interesting or intriguing. And I thought, okay, well, this would sort of tie into everything else we do on the website, but the truth is that the nature of the content there is so varied and eclectic that I don't think if people even found the podcast randomly that would really necessarily bring them over to the website, which is one of the things that I was thinking of, and vice versa. If people come to the website for one thing, they may not necessarily find the podcast. And I said, let's just break the podcast out, because really historically, out of all the stuff that we've done online, when Jen and I do a podcast together, it seems to get the biggest response. And I feel like, well, if that's the case, getting back to our discussion of metrics and analytics, if there's anything to be said for that, then I think we should maybe focus on that a little more and really let that kind of be a thing that can shine on its own. And if people want to go read the blogs on nomarket.org, that's fine as well.
So getting back to traveling and me coming over to see you guys, etc., in mid-February, you guys will be at the end of the American trip again.
Yeah, this is similar to what happened last year, Irk, where you saw us right before you left. So I guess we'll get to hear all of your, we'll get to hear about all your adventures again firsthand.
So the interesting question is, have you seen the infamous Slow double-decker bus?
Interestingly enough, I haven't. And I'm not sure if that's just due to coincidences of when I'm out and about, or if perhaps Slow Transit has cut back the service on the double decker. I did happen to encounter it once a few months back. It was parked at the transit center downtown, curiously not in a stall where that bus normally parked, but I'm not sure that I've seen it since, so I'm really not certain what the story is there. I don't know if they've decided to run it less, or like I said, maybe it's just I'm not around at the times when it runs. Typically, from what I gather, they we're using it mostly in the mornings and then again in the afternoons. So I'm not sure. And right now, being in the holiday break time for the college, which really was the whole purpose of them buying the double-decker bus, was to take college students back and forth, I don't think it's even running. Now, by the time you get back, if it is in service, I'm sure they'll be using it, because the holiday break ends, I think, in mid-January, so for the college. I don't know. I don't know entirely what the status is on the double-decker.
We so need to find it and ride it.
Yeah, you know, I've only been on it once, and in fact, I didn't that one time. I didn't actually go up to the top. So, and, you know, that's obviously by far the most alluring thing of the double-decker bus, because they're really, we don't have any, you know, vehicles here in town that are that high off the ground. And, I mean, I don't know, it's just kind of cool, I guess, to go up to the second deck. So, and just to let everybody know, this is not like a, you know, this isn't like a tourist bus in London or whatever. Like, the second deck is enclosed. You don't, you're not outside or anything. So, I mean, it's not that exciting. But for our little town, it's kind of a cool thing. So, I don't know, after, you know, sometime around when you get out here, maybe I'll just have to call them and see if they'll tell me. I don't know if they'll tell me. They may not, you know. They may go, I'm sorry, sir, that's privileged information, and we can't release that. I honestly don't know why, but stranger things have happened.
Have you warned Denny's that I'm coming yet?
No, we haven't been to Denny's in a while, but we'll be sure to send out a note to their corporate headquarters so they can expect a surge in stock prices.
And they better have steak.
Well, of course.
Because I was thinking about the last time that I was with you guys, and what we said we should do this time is just record anything when all three of us are together, or there's just two of us together. It's going to be a lot of audio.
Well, yeah, that was what I said. You know, I said we sat down here in this room I'm in right now, and we did a quote-unquote proper podcast with the three of us, and really all we did was we just kind of recapped, you know, really everything that we had talked about when we were just out and about, you know, having meals together or doing stuff. And it just kind of dawned on me at the end. I said, you know, we should have just recorded, you know, the conversations as they were happening, because if nothing else, they were a little bit more, you know, candid and off the cuff, and perhaps a little more entertaining. And, you know, just taking that and spliced it all together at the end and kind of put that out as the, you know, ErkPod comes to San Luis Town episode of whatever, and just kind of leave it at that. And I think that's probably what we should do this time around as well.
I still remember when we went to Moe's.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, with Dick ramming everybody. What was that? I can't even remember what that was about.
Yeah, it was a NASCAR race, and Dick was an innocent victim. He got that's rammed, right, from behind Dick, by somebody, yeah, else.
Yeah, that's right. Dick got rammed, yeah.
And then you said he wanted a bit of Danica Patrick.
That's right. Dick was really trying to get a piece of Danica, but he got rammed.
Yeah.
Really a tragic story.
Yeah, fun stuff. Probably better if people go back to the episode. I'll put a link in the show notes to that actual episode that we did, because I think Jen's reaction, because she wasn't with us at the time, that was funny too.
Yeah, for sure.
So I know you asked me at the time, but what would have been your highlight of my trip?
Well, it was, you know, fun having you here for sure. I mean, not to, deprecate the rest of your trip, but I mean, I wasn't with you for all of that. So the part where you were here was certainly the most fun for me. I don't know. I just, you know, it was just cool having you around. And then, you know, it's always good to just, you know, hang out or do stuff. I mean, we didn't really, in terms of like places we went or events or whatever, we didn't really do a lot, but we spent a lot of time together, and that was ultimately the point anyway. So I don't know, the highlights maybe you know, the epic you know, midnight meal at Denny's. That happens every time that you're here, and we definitely had one of those. And then you know, us recording the podcast was fun. And you know, Irk, you did actually this time, you did get to ride on a slow transit bus. It was not the double decker. Well, last time, you know, it was not the double decker, but you still did get to get a little closer to the fine experiences I have all the time riding the bus. So it was kind of cool to share that with you. I don't know, you know, just all this stuff.
Yeah, there was some funny moments there. The unnecessary noises and checking me into the hotel in Slate was interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, the I think is that, I'm trying to remember that sign at your hotel here. It did actually say, it did actually use the phrase unnecessary noises, right?
Yep.
In the pool.
Yep.
Yeah, we're still trying to determine exactly what unnecessary noises are. But if you stay at I'm trying to remember what hotel was that, Irk? Was it a Econo Lodge?
I think so. It was just up, there was a Cowgirl Cafe, I think, across the road from it.
I think it was Econo Lodge, and they have a pool there, and you are forbidden from making unnecessary noises in the pool area, but they don't explain what that could be. So I guess it's just one of those things that you know, are left up to your own devices to discern. And in turn, it really gives the pool or the hotel staff a really wide range of, you know, things that they can presumably kick you out of the pool for. So, you know, if you're out there and you're just splashing too hard, maybe that's an unnecessary noise, all the way to the other end of if you're out there, you know, with, you know, an air horn and... you know, a bass amp, you know, turned all the way up, possibly amplifying the air horn through the bass amp, they can get, you know, they can kick you out of the pool area for that as well. And then, of course, I went with you to check into the hotel, and we did kind of have that moment with the guy who was checking you in. We were both there at the counter, and you know, you had obviously booked a room with one bed in it because you're just by yourself, and you know, he goes to check you in and get all your information, and then he kind of looks over at me kind of like, you know, well, you must be here with him. And you know, it was just kind of funny afterwards. We kind of joked about that, you know, like you know, like, no, yeah, we're really not, you know, here together. I don't remember exactly what I said to the guy. I said, I think I'm just here with, you know, I'm just a friend. I'm here to, you know, while he gets checked in or whatever. But, you know, he did have that moment where he just kind of had that look like, well, you guys must be here together. So it's kind of funny.
And then we joked that we'd start a podcast called Two Guys, One Bed.
Yeah, Two Guys in a Bed or whatever. That'll be our podcast. It was funny.
Now, the question is, I've tried to vary each American trip. The first time, as you know, I drove around. The second time, I did a lot of Amtraking around. The next time, the time that you'll see me next, I'll be flying around. The question is, do I go back to that same hotel, or do I try another one?
Well, I guess ultimately it's up to you. I think that, you know, if you had a good experience there, then why not? I mean, from our perspective, where we live, there really aren't any hotels that are necessarily any closer than that. And I mean, San Luis isn't a big city to begin with. It's not like, you know, you were an hour away from us. So, you know, I guess it's just up to you. I mean, overall, you know, that location's not bad, and, you know, if the hotel's okay, that's fine. I think, well, although I don't even know. I mean, I think if I were coming to San Luis to stay as a tourist and I wanted to have any time to just kind of explore things on my own, you know, I might try to I might maybe stay on Upper Monterey or, you know, maybe closer into downtown. But the truth is that really your hotel wasn't that far away from the downtown core of San Luis. It was only about maybe 3 or 4 blocks away. So, you know, San Luis is weird in that we're a big tourist town, but we don't have a lot of lodging really in the middle of town. There's like a couple of bed and breakfasts, I think. I know for sure there's one. But, you know, if you really want to be able to just roll out of your hotel room and kind of be in the middle of everything, there's not a lot of choices for that. So, I don't know. I guess the decision really is up to you as to whether or not, you know, you had a reasonable stay there and, you know, you didn't wind up with, a bathroom full of ants, as Jen and I recently experienced one of the recent times we stayed in a hotel. So, if you don't have any of those problems, then why not?
And this time, if I do go back there, of course, it will depend on what sort of prices I can get at the time. But sure, we'll have to see if the pool is actually open.
Yeah, well, if it was, it was closed last time, wasn't it? So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know the reason for that. I don't know if it's if it was being maintained, or if maybe, you know, there had already been recently, there had already been too many unnecessary noise occurrences, and they just said, we're shutting it down. This is getting out. We can't control the unnecessary noises. We're shutting it down for a while, or what the case is. So I don't know. And I mean, it's not like the weather gets, you know, it cools off here around this time of year, but it isn't like it ever gets severely cold, or certainly during the day it's generally warm enough you can still have a pool open, so it isn't like they've got to shut it down seasonally unless it's just a thing they do. So I don't know, you'll have to see.
Yes, we will have to see. And speaking of coming to SLO, the way that I'm actually getting there is going to be somewhat different this year as well. The first year in 2009 I drove, and you guys were basically the first stop. And I still remember, and there's still a photo on the website, when I actually rung you, Shauno, the very first sign that says San Luis Obispo, next 10 exits. And I remember ringing you up and saying, hey, Shauno, which exit do I take?
Yeah. Well, again, you know, we're not a big town necessarily. We're probably the largest town in this area. And, yeah, there's a lot of exits here. And so, yeah, you did need a little bit of help because, it isn't like any one that you got off at, we would have eventually been able to get you here, but certainly some were more convenient than others.
Because I know the area that I live in has got a lot more people than what SLO has, and there's only 2 exits.
Well, I don't know. You can chalk that up to our wacky freeway planning here. I'm sure that it's got something to do with the way this town has expanded over time, because really not all that long ago, historically speaking, you know, San Luis Obispo was really just, you know, it was kind of the downtown area, and then things expanded a bit when the university got bigger and bigger. But over time, you know, these other pockets have sort of sprung up with development and all that. And, you know, we have an airport. What's interesting about the airport is technically it's not in the city of San Luis Obispo. It's technically owned and controlled by the county, even though you know, this is where it is. But, you know, so, yeah, there's a lot of exits here. It's kind of weird because you go to, you know, you start to go south of here, and, you know, a lot of the cities only have maybe a couple of exits. Pismo Beach has a lot. It's probably also got something to do with the fact that we are a tourist town, and, you know, there's a lot of different places people want to go. If we only had maybe two or three exits off the freeway, people that just wanted to come here to go to the college would probably then have to drive through a whole swath of town that would be unnecessary. And so, you know, I guess it has its advantages.
And then, of course, earlier this year in 2013, I wonder how long it's going to take me to be able to say 2014 properly, I actually flew into what we were calling Slow International Airport.
Yeah. Yeah, a fun-sized airport. You did fly in this time. So as I told you, you know, just give me a call when you get here, because the airport is so small that really getting in and out of it, it's not a very time-consuming process. And, of course, again, it doesn't take anyone, including us, that long to get there. So it wasn't like we needed, you know, 45 minutes of lead time for you to get your bags and for us to drive down there and pick you up. So,
but it was ironic because that was the time where I was flying. It was cheaper for me to fly from San Francisco, which is where I was immediately before Slow, to LA and then to Slow, rather than going direct San Francisco to Slow.
Well, and that's just, you know, the general wackiness of airline travel. And the fact of the matter is that there isn't a lot of regular traffic, I think, between San Luis and SFO. Most of our flights tend to go down either to LAX or out to Sky Harbor and Phoenix. And I think there's a fair few that may fly out to Denver. One of the things that the local government is always trying to do, well, the county government and the airport people are trying to do, is they're always trying to open up more routes. And there was a time back before the recession hit in late 2008 that San Luis actually had three. Our airport actually had three carriers. We had United, American, and for a short period of time, we had Delta, and Delta was actually flying out to, I believe it was Salt Lake City, and that was a big deal for a while because you couldn't, you know, there was no way. It was either Salt Lake or Boise. I can't remember which one, but it was a big deal at the time because, there's no other way that you could go in that direction without making a connection somewhere. But as it stands, most of the time, if you're going to fly in or out of San Luis Obispo Airport, you're probably going to come through either LAX or Sky Harbor in Phoenix. And, you know, that was your experience as well.
And that's
it's just funny. I said at the time that, you know, we'll have to track your flight and, you know, go out and wave at the sky when you fly over, because I'm sure you did. I'm sure your plane flew right over us between going from San Francisco to LA, and then, you know, you obviously came back. But, you know, airlines, who can make sense out of them?
So the interesting thing this time, and as I said, I'm trying to do things a bit different again. Immediately before seeing you guys, I'll be seeing another podcaster, music podcaster Justin Wayne from The Justin Wayne Show, who lives in Walla Walla, Washington. So
okay. It's
going to be a bit of a... That part of the trip is going to be a regional part of the trip. So mm-hmm. I'll be flying from Walla Walla to Seattle on Alaska Airlines.
Okay.
Then I'll be flying. It was actually cheaper for me to fly this way compared to flying to LA or flying to San Francisco and then flying to Slow. Then on ACME, I'm flying Seattle to Salt Lake City. Salt Lake City to Phoenix, and then Phoenix to Slow.
Okay.
And it was actually cheaper to do all that than what it was to fly from Seattle to San Francisco.
Well, you know, whatever works, I guess. I mean, like I said, you can't really make sense of how these airlines work and how they work out all their ticket, you know, systems and what costs more or less depending on the type of travel. And I'm sure it's all got to do with their calculations of, okay, historically, how many people have we been able to book on this flight? And naturally, from the airline's perspective, they want to have as many people in seats on all the flights as possible because it more or less costs them the same amount of money to fly a full plane as it does to fly a plane that's, you know, two-thirds full or whatever.
So what would I see in Salt Lake City?
I don't really know. I've been there once, but I drove through it more than I was actually there. So I don't know that there's anything really to speak of. The state of Utah is known for being being settled by the Mormons, so there are a lot of Mormons there, it isn't like you, I think, anyway, and it isn't like you, step off the plane and you're immediately shunted into a Mormon church and or anything like that. So, I mean, it has that reputation, but I don't think it's anything you're really going to encounter, especially while you're just in the airport. So I don't know. I mean, you're just going to be waiting to catch another flight there, right? You're not going to have time to really do much else.
Well, I get into Salt Lake City at 1:10 in the afternoon from Seattle. And then I'm basically out at 2 p.m., so I've got like a 50-minute transit. Yeah.
You'll have enough time pretty much to, you know, grab a Pepsi and get to your next gate, depending on how far away those things are. So you won't have a whole lot of time. I don't know. I've never been to the Salt Lake City airport, so I don't know. I don't know what goes on up there.
I will, however, be having a fair bit of time. They've actually adjusted one of the flights, and my next stop, Phoenix Sky Harbor, I'll be actually spending a bit of time. I arrived there just after 3:30 in the afternoon from Salt Lake City, and then I don't leave for SLO until 9 p.m.
Yeah, that is one of the big downsides of flying into San Luis is, there aren't that many flights in or out through the course of a day, so a lot of times you do get stuck having to wait and catch the last flight, and I've been in that position a few times myself. I was lucky the last time Jen and I flew, which was from Chicago, we got through everything early enough that we were actually back in San Luis. We got the earlier flight. I think we were back in San Luis around 4:30 in the afternoon, but I have been on that late flight as well, the one that you're going to be on. And, one thing, if I'm not mistaken, and this might be worth researching, and of course, Irk, you always have to take into consideration, as I'm sure you know, if you leave the terminal, then you've got to go back through security. But I know, I'm fairly certain that Sky Harbor has a tram that actually, if you ride the length of the tram, at one point, it actually goes over the tarmac. So instead of, you know, a lot of these trams at larger airports, you know, they're used for purposes of shuttling people to and from remote parking, which I'm pretty sure the one at Sky Harbor does as well. And the views are generally not that impressive. But I gather that this one at Sky Harbor, unless I'm mistaken about the airport, and I could be, there is a point where it actually goes over. There's a bridge that goes over the tarmac, so you've got an opportunity there to actually see some planes. And, you know, they have a photo of there's actually a part in the course of the tram where it goes over a bridge that is big enough for a plane to pass under it. So, it would probably be a a really lucky coincidence if you actually experienced that, but you know, it seems like you might have enough time that if you wanted to seek that out, you could probably do it. Oh, and one thing to keep in mind is, granted, it will be winter, so this may have a bearing, but Phoenix is hot. It's in the desert, and it's always hot there. It'll probably be a little cooler, but if you ever have a reason to go through Sky Harbor in the summer months, that the moment that you get you know, the moment that you leave the airport to get onto the jetway, immediately it's like you've walked into an oven. And probably in your case, you may, I know I've at least one time I've had to actually take the you know, get down onto the tarmac to get onto a plane in Sky Harbor. I don't know if that'll be your experience or not, but you know, something to consider.
Another interesting thing, and I don't know how this will be affected. I haven't heard anything from the airlines concerned, but that flight is a US Airways flight, and I believe they've just merged with American.
That could be. I know that. I mean, technically speaking, here in San Luis, you know, our carriers are U.S. Airways and United, but really the U.S. Airways flights have been primarily operated by United. So I don't know if any of this will have any impact on your flight. I highly doubt that it will. I guess the more interesting thing for us is to contemplate that over time, depending on how that merger shakes out, we may have American Airlines back at our airport, because they were here once before.
So you're in America, of course. Are you hearing good things about that merger?
I don't know. I haven't been paying a lot. I don't pay a tremendous amount of attention to news of airlines. I fly so irregularly that, you know, it's interesting to me as more of a curiosity than anything else. So I haven't heard anything bad about it. Overall, when I learn about these types of stories, I'm not really surprised, because the airline industry has been really in a state of decline, beginning with the terrorist attacks of 2001. So the airlines have been merging and buying each other out all over the place ever since then. So I'm not surprised by it. I don't know. I think for most people, they're not really going to see a lot of direct changes as far as their own experiences. I mean, I could be wrong.
It just seems funny to me as an Australian. You've got two airlines that are pretty much using the same sort of identity. One of them's calling themselves American, and the other one's calling themselves US Airways, which could really be the same sort of thing.
Well, yeah, but that's a normal thing here in America. We love to brand our businesses as either American or US. And yeah, to the rest of the world, that probably seems a little strange, but they are in fact separate companies. And here in America, people wouldn't really make that, you know, they wouldn't make that, there wouldn't be any confusion there. People would kind of understand. And of course, unlike a lot of other nations, we don't have any nationalized air carrier. So, you know, American Airlines is a private company. U.S. Airways is, well, they're technically a public company in the sense that they have stockholders, and I'm sure U.S. Air is as well. But, you know, they're not, you know, none of them are the official, you know, state airline of America. They just have those names. And up until the merger, yeah, they had nothing to do with each other.
And you can also throw United into that list as well.
Yeah, you kind of can. You kind of can. It's got a similar name to it, and certainly all of these companies have tied a lot of their liveries into, you know, the red, white, and blue. So, you know, it's something that in its own way would not surprise me if people from outside of America were surprised or were confused, I think is a better word.
Now, of course, after I leave you guys, I'm flying to LAX on United, and then I'm getting out of a really, really small plane into a really, really big plane and flying over to Japan on a Singapore Airlines A380.
Well, that'll be exciting for you. Now, this will be your second A380, is that correct?
That's right. When I came to America in 2009, I specifically flew Qantas so I can fly their A380. But now yeah. that I've basically aligned myself with the Virgin group of airlines, Virgin Australia don't have any A380s. The closest they've got is the A330. Which I'll be travelling on in March. But Singapore Airlines, part of that group, they do have A380s, so I'll be flying to Japan, to Singapore, and then to Sydney, all on A380s, and I made sure that they were A380 flights.
Cool. Well, that'll be exciting for you. You know, it's funny. I use this website called planefinder.net, and you know, sometimes what's weird about where I live is, as we've established, this is by no means a huge metropolis, and our airport is indeed fun-sized. So it's not likely that any Airbus class vehicle will ever land here at our airport. Though interestingly, we have had a few 737s here, but those are rare. And I don't think there will be a day in my life when 737s are a regular occurrence at our airport.
But having said that, Shauna, if you get a 737 in there, you can get an A319 or a 320. They're basically similar size.
Yeah, that's true. So, you know, but I mean, we're not going to let those French planes in over here. So. The thing is that, again, getting back to this plane finder, you know, sometimes because of where we're located and we're right on the coast, there is a lot of air traffic that flies over here. So sometimes when I can hear one of them fly over, I'll try to run over to plane finder real quick and see what it is. And there have been quite a few A380s that have, you know, flown over here. So your plane may very well be one of those when you take off. I guess overall you feel confident in the A380. I know there was that story a while ago that, you know, I think it was Qantas was having an issue with the engines falling off one or something to that effect.
Yeah, there was an uncontained engine failure in one of them, which was very well done, very well handled by Qantas in the end, and everyone was safe. Somebody in Indonesia got some souvenirs, but apart from that, of course, the Dreamliner, the 787, has had some issues as well.
Oh yeah.
So you know, new planes, new trains, new automobiles—they all have issues.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, these things will always be improved over time. Now, while and obviously the flight, I mean, the advantage to flying something like the A380, you know, on the flights like you're taking, is those are obviously long flights from, you know, leaving the west coast of America and then either, you know, heading back to Australia or going to Asia, as you are in this case. And is there any advantage from your previous experience as a passenger? Does it feel like there's more room to move around or walk around? I know that also last time you were able to experience the tail cam. Don't know if that's still a thing or not.
The tail cam is something that I'm looking forward to. That specifically seems to be an A380 sort of thing.
Yeah.
You do have more room. The Airbuses that I've been on seem to be more quieter than the Boeing product, which is interesting.
Hmm. Well, that's just because, you know, when American planes show up, we want you to know about it. So, although I don't know that you may be actually saying that more from the perspective of being in the cabin, which is an entirely different experience. But yeah, I mean, that's pretty cool. And so now you'll have, so you're going to fly on a couple of A380s, did you say, during your trip through Asia or just the one?
No, it'll be three separate A380s from LAX to Japan. I'll be spending a week in Japan, and then from Japan to Singapore, spending another week there, and then flying home to Sydney.
I get the impression that the Asian countries have been a lot more ready to accept the A380. There may not be anything to that, but it seems like, you know, there was a lot of hesitation here at first in America with regards to, you know, the size of the plane and everything, though obviously it isn't like it's, you know, the footprint of it or anything isn't any bigger than any other plane. It isn't like they needed to retrofit runways all over the place for it. But it just seems like more of the Asian airlines have been, acquiring the A380s than it seems like anywhere else. And that just may be because they happen to be in the market, and those were on the market. I don't really know, but it's cool that you'll get to ride on a few different ones.
The main problem that the airports had with the A380 was not only taxiways, but also the gates themselves. Rather than load everybody through the front door, some airports have got two or three aero bridges that they can load simultaneously. And so you'll find that, like at LAX, there's not that many gates that'll be A380 compatible.
Yeah, well, and that's always going to be a thing about dealing with stuff in America. I'm trying to figure out the best way to phrase this, but by having the first of a lot of things, we also have the oldest of a lot of things. Mm. And I'm not really trying to make that seem in an arrogant kind of way, but I mean, we kind of had the first big airports here, and because of that, it's harder for us to just, oh, well, let's build a whole new terminal that can, you know, accommodate something like an A380 with multiple aero bridges and stuff like that. So, you know, it's always we run into the same problem with trains here. You know, there's this big push to put in essentially a bullet train, a high speed rail between San Francisco and Los Angeles, which would be an amazing thing for us to have in California. But there's so much blowback against it. And, you know, we don't have the ability to just lay down tons and tons of new track for something like that. Whereas in other countries that probably never had, you know, the older train systems to begin with, they could just start with that. So there's a lot of areas, especially in transportation, where we're behind everybody else.
Well, a classic example of what we were saying in relation to the airport, LAX is a classic example. When I flew there first in 2009, Tom Bradley International Terminal was basically one massive construction site because the construction and the reconstruction was only just beginning. When I went there this year in 2013, it was, you know, almost finished. Stage one was almost finished, and, you know, there's still work to be done. An interesting experience that I had last year, leaving Los Angeles and heading home for Sydney, was trying to get into the Virgin America Lounge. I'm sure you all remember that, Shauno.
Right.
And the conversation that we had with the lady in the lounge in LAX trying to get my way in. An interesting thing is happening at the moment with Virgin Australia. At the moment, their check-in facilities and the Virgin America Lounge is in Terminal 3. However, recently, Virgin Australia flights now arrive in the Tom Bradley International Terminal, which is where most of the most of the international flights come into. And now they're also leaving from Tom Bradley, but for the moment at least, you still have to check in over at Terminal 3.
Yeah, that's confusing for sure.
You know, and it is a little bit confusing because when I arrived earlier this year, I arrived in the Delta terminal in Terminal 5, but we were leaving from the Virgin Australia terminal in Terminal 3. But on this occasion, I'll be both arriving and departing at Tom Bradley, and also Singapore flies from there as well.
Wow. Well, good luck with all that.
And, of course, you'll get to hear that. The interesting thing is that as a result of that, I won't be in the Virgin Lounge, so the runway views, and I'm sure you saw the plane photos that I was able to take from that lounge, will be different. Apparently, there's some really great tarmac views from the new lounge that I'll be able to get into, the Star Alliance Lounge in Tom Bradley International, so that will be interesting.
Yeah, definitely. I'll look forward to those photos.
Because I know that before that trip, I really didn't see the point of an airline lounge. I didn't really see the point. But because I had such a long layover in LAX from the slow flight to the flight to Sydney, I thought, well, let's go into the lounge. Let's see what it's like. And from then on, I've been in many of the Australian lounges, and it's definitely a better way to fly if you can get it.
Yeah, I would agree based on your experience. Obviously, I've never been in a lounge. I've been fortunate in most of my flying experiences. I haven't had to suffer too many really long layovers. There's been maybe a couple, but most of my layovers have probably been, under 2 hours for sure. So I haven't really had to worry too much about that. But I can definitely see where having access to the lounge would be nice.
And it certainly was nice to be in that Virgin Lounge. I've got a little bit of a shorter layover this time between the slow flight and the Japan flight. And I've got about 5 hours between arriving from Australia and heading up to Vegas. This will be the first time that I'm actually using LAX just to transit.
Interesting.
So it's going to be interesting to see what happens. And, of course, everyone will get to hear about it here anyway.
Yeah, for sure.
So, looking back, Shauna, you and I have been friends for quite some time now.
Yeah, actually, it was, I think, late 2007 when we met initially, and that must have been through the Yahoo Podcasters group. That must have been it, right?
That would have been it. And then I think your first appearance would have been in about May 2008. From memory?
Probably. Something like that.
And then from then on, you've been pretty much a constant company since then, in one way, shape, or form.
Yeah, of course.
So I was just thinking about it the other day, coming up to episode 450. There's just been so much that's happened. The vast majority of the things I've really enjoyed. And one of the things, and I think you'll agree with this, Shauna, is that I've, been to some interesting places, and it's been great to be able to take people like you along for the ride.
Well, sure. I mean, you've been everywhere in the last, in the time that I've known you. I mean, you've gone to, you've obviously been here a few times. You've been to Europe. You've been to these different points in Asia, as well as various places around Australia and New Zealand. So, it's cool. It's cool to, for you to be able to share those experiences with people. And then, of course, we get to hear the stories, and through the magic of ambient audio, we get to hear some of the sounds and stuff. Which is a little closer to some of those places than I imagine a lot of us will ever get to. So, that's good as well. And then, I'm subscribe to your Flickr feed, so obviously I see all the photos as well.
But it's also interesting to hear, for instance, other podcasters, they say that they record these shows, like you and I having this conversation now. Like, we'd have this conversation, a basic edit, and then up it goes into the internet. A lot of podcasters actually would not listen back to their own podcast.
Yeah, I gather that happens. I mean, I don't really, you know, I don't know. It doesn't really matter to me how other people produce their shows or what it is that they do with their audio. In my own case, I tend to not go back to my own things, I don't know, to listen to out of sheer enjoyment. But I usually listen to them, you know, to at least put up show notes and stuff. I am going to be going through some of my old episodes of various shows and pulling out clips and stuff to kind of stitch together for the occasional compilation show, so I'll hear the stuff there. Yeah, I don't know. In general, podcasters are a weird bunch, and a lot of people have very strong opinions on you know, producing a show, so whatever.
A classic example for me, though, is for my show, or for this show, I should say, is the ability to relive it when I'm actually not at the place where I was. As a classic example, yesterday I was listening to the episode where I was, I was going to search for the Melbourne Tram in San Francisco. And so I recorded that in February 2013, and here it is December 2013, and I'm listening to it. And just the ability in the audio form of being able to listen to it and go back and maybe hear some things that I didn't hear at the time or that I've, you know, put to the back of my mind or whatever. There was the episode that I recorded when I was on my way to see you guys and I was at LAX and they had all the safety announcements from the TSA and then there was a whole heap of piano music that I don't remember. So that, for me, is a great way to be able to relive the holiday.
Yeah, sure. I mean, anytime you record an experience like that, you know, whatever the medium is, it gives you the opportunity to go back and revisit that later. And, you know, in your case, you have the audio recording. So then that's, you know, a really comprehensive way to relive that. That is maybe a little more so than, say, just taking photos or maybe even taking video, because video is something that to really, you know, video is a funny thing in comparison to audio because it demands more of your active attention. Whereas with audio, you can kind of listen to it maybe while you're doing something else, but that also allows you to get a little more immersed into, whatever it is. You know, you definitely have that with the recordings that you've made.
And just little silly things that we did, like the Pepsi challenge last year or this year.
Yeah, that was fun. Yeah.
Now, how am I going to top that?
You know, I don't know. It was funny. You know, that was very off the cuff. It wasn't like we planned that in advance. It was just, oh, we have all these different, you know, we have access to all of these different kinds of Pepsi because in Australia, of course, you just have Australian Pepsi, and here in America, we have American Pepsi. We have Pepsi Throwback, which is essentially the old American Pepsi, aka the Pepsi that most of the rest of the world has all the time. And then we also have Mexican Pepsi. So we just kind of threw this thing together, like, oh, hey, let's get one of each. But yeah, I don't know. I don't know. We'll have to figure out something.
Well, I know that where I will be going after you guys, Japan, Pepsi's of the world again.
Yeah. Yeah, I gather that they have some really interesting flavors out there.
Which is interesting because I went to one of my local convenience stores across from the station where I work at, and they had basically zero Pepsi yesterday. I spoke to the woman a couple of months ago, and she was having a sookie la-la that it was costing too much to get the Pepsi from the supplier, so they basically weren't going to stock it.
Well, you know, I don't know what happens over there at the Pepsi, because I've seen in my lifetime Pepsi really lose a lot of ground to Coke, at least here in the United States, and predominantly it's been in restaurants. I can think of a few restaurants that used to sell Pepsi that have switched over to Coke. In fact, there's one here in San Luis that I used to go to pretty regularly. You know, I used to love to go there and sit at the counter, and they'd have the Pepsi fountain right there. And then one day I came in and it was Coke, and I was like, why have you betrayed me? I don't know. Pepsi is must have some weird business practices that make the businesses that choose to carry their product have to really want to do so. I don't really understand.
I know there's a lot of convenience stores and whatever, and they will have a fridge that is, for instance, dedicated to the Coke product. And so the fridge comes from Coke. They can only have like Coke and Coke related drinks in that cupboard or in that fridge. So you can't even have like a bottle of Pepsi in that fridge. You have to have it in a separate fridge if you're allowed to have it at all.
Well, certainly these drink manufacturers, they can institute all kinds of draconian measures to ensure that either they get total control of distribution, or they're able to get a prime spot. You see it here all the time in the major grocery stores, the big brands, but it happens a lot with the soda manufacturers, Pepsi and Coke primarily, in that, you know, their positionings in the aisle, the soda aisle, change, and that all has to do with the deals that, you know, the manufacturers have struck with the chains. Presumably, if they have a better deal, then they'll get, you know, a more prominent placement. And I'm sure in the smaller places, you know, the convenience stores and stuff, it's probably even more controlled.
And I know with things like sports stadiums, and, you know, it could even come down to airports. They'll have one or the other.
Yeah, that is true. A lot of times with those kind of facilities, the facility will sign an exclusivity agreement with, you know, one or the other, and that's all they're allowed to have, which is particularly curious here in America, because in a lot of our terminals, we have fast food places, and those fast food places nationwide, you know, they have their own agreements with the different soda manufacturers. So I'm not sure exactly what happens in those cases. I don't think, you know, I don't really know. I don't know if, you know, you went to McDonald's that was in a terminal here in America where the airport had signed some type of agreement with Pepsi, if you'd have to get Pepsi then from the McDonald's. I just can't see that happening. But I'm sure they've probably got some clauses in there that you know, those companies can deal with the other company if they're allowed to. But certainly when you talk about amusement parks or sports stadiums or even events, one of the big things that happens out here every summer is the California Mid-State Fair, and it used to be that all of the food vendors there would sell Pepsi, and last year it was Coke. So clearly these things can change, and again, it's just all got to do with who's going to give them either a better deal in terms of paying for that exclusivity, or perhaps if they're going to supply any product directly, they'll go, well, listen, if you'll give us exclusivity on the event, you know, we'll cut you a deal on, you know, how much product we'll deliver to you. It's all about business.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's all about the money, but hey, what can you do?
Not much if you're stuck in a situation. You just got to go with whatever's there.
And so even like with me, I buy a lot of Pepsi. I buy it bulk. I should really have shares in the company, but I'm not exactly – or a sponsorship deal. Anybody from Pepsi,
yeah,
if you're listening.
You
It's funny, I was at work in the meal room the other day, and one of my fellow drivers says to me, oh, so you're going to go to the shop and you're going to buy two Cokes. And I thought, well, I won't correct him at that point. I went to the shop, I got my meat pies, and I got my Pepsis, and I came back and he says, I knew you'd have two of something. And I says, well, you don't know me too well, because if it's possible, I'll get Pepsi.
Right. Well, and, you know, I'm the same way. I have my preferences, and if I have a choice, then I'm definitely going to take Pepsi over Coke if I can get it.
Because I know it was really strange. After I had glandular fever in 2007, for about 3 months afterwards, I just could not handle Coke unless it was with alcohol. It was really, really strange.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, when I was younger, I liked Coke, but I just kind of got over it. Lately, I'm finding that I don't really even like it that much. Sometimes if I go to a restaurant and they have Coke, I'll just skip it and have water. I don't know. Pepsi's just more of an enjoyable drink. It's smoother. It's a little sweeter. Coke's got a little bit more of a bite to it. I don't know. It just feels a little more refined. I don't know if we can really start to bring wine talk here into into sodas, but there's just something about it that to me is more enjoyable.
Well, it's all very interesting to see. I'll be looking forward to seeing if I can find some more throwback Pepsi. I know I probably will in San Francisco. That was the main place that I found it. And also, was it the Walgreens that I got it at Slow? Was it Walgreens?
It was actually the CVS.
Oh, the CVS, yes.
And the throwback can be a little fleeting. Not a lot of places tend to carry it in the individual bottles. Oddly enough, we actually have a case of throwback right now in our fridge, which is actually the first one we bought in a while. But you can generally find the cases of throwback a little more easily in the larger grocery stores. But finding those individual bottles is definitely more of a challenge. And yeah, some of the bigger chain places that sell drinks out of coolers with a little more regularity, like the drugstores, might have them, but a lot of your smaller places probably won't.
So we'll have to wait and see. Sure, no, it's been fun, but unfortunately work's calling soon, so I will do my second last shift before I fly away to America.
All right. Well, have fun with that then.
It's interesting. I was talking to some of my work colleagues yesterday, and I said to them, do you realize that for the first 6 months of the year, I'll only be working 2 months and still getting paid for it?
Well, that's got to be a pretty good feeling. I have no idea what that's like.
I know I tried to explain long service leave to some Americans once, and it was very interesting.
Yeah, we don't have anything like that here. I don't know of a job you can have that affords you that kind of leave. So that's pretty cool.
So I'll be sure to make advantage. I'll be sure to make advantage of it. Looking forward, of course, to seeing you and Jen in mid-February.
Yeah, for sure.
And where can people find you on the interweb, Sean? Although if they're listening to this show, they probably know exactly where.
Well, yeah, there's a good chance of that. You can find me on Twitter at Shawno, S-H-A-W-N-O. You can, I just relaunched my personal blog. If you want to follow the unfolding story of my work saga, I'm blogging about it there. That's Shawn.mx, S-H-A-W-N.mx. That's all you need to plug into your web browser. It'll get you there. There's no .com or .anything else. .mx is a real domain extension. It's not a spam site. You're not going to get overloaded with viruses or something if you go there. And outside of that, everything else that's currently happening, you can go to nomarket.org. That'll take you to the No Market Collective, which is where Jen and I are posting things. Jen, way more than me. And occasionally our friends jump in and post something there as well. It's blog heavy right now, though when Jen relaunches her podcast, it will be through there. And, of course, when the time comes, we'll make an announcement about our other podcast that's coming soon as well.
And you'll have to invite me on the new podcast, just saying.
Well, I mean, if we get that rolled out by the time you're here, which I'm sure you will. I mean, we'll either do a show with you like we have done traditionally in the past, or, you know, we will do the thing where we just kind of record the conversations as they happen, and then I'll edit those all together, and they'll go out. So you'll be prominently featured one way or another.
Awesome. The interesting thing about how you said you're on Twitter as Shawno, some of the applications and whatnot, they auto-complete the person that I'm typing to. And so I'll type underscore S-H-A-N-O, but you don't come up straight away. Even though I tweet you often, all these other people who I've never even heard of will come up, and then only when I type the O does your little thingy come up.
I don't know. I guess I'm not, I'm not pulling enough weight over on the Twitter fame index, I guess. I don't really know why any of that is.
It's just funny. I just thought that it would work on who I tweet often, and so I'm not tweeting people that I've never heard of, but it keeps on suggesting, oh, don't you mean, actually, I should do that now and just see quickly who comes up to see if I've actually heard of any of these people.
Sure.
This is riveting podcasting, folks.
I get a lot of misdirected tweets. There's somebody out there that's got their name is Sean, and then their last name is O apostrophe something. And dumb people think that the apostrophe is a valid part of their Twitter handle. So I get all of these at Shawno, and then Twitter breaks it because of the apostrophe. So I see this, you know, it's supposed to be for, you know, at Shawno apostrophe, whatever the rest of the last name is. So I get a lot of those tweets misdirected at me.
Okay, interesting.
Oh, yeah.
Here we go. I've just typed in Tweetbot at S for to start at Shawno.
Mm-hmm.
And it says, at OXA bad idea, and the I in idea is written as a one. The next one is at 10 ticks, whatever that is, at 11 Andy Man, at 1223 Newcastle, which is an ABC radio station here in Sydney. And then,
well, at least that's got some relevance to you.
Yeah, at 12th Man Tim, don't know who that is. At 12th Planet Press, don't know who that is. At 131500 Buses, which is a Twitter account for our buses, so that's relevant. At 131500 Trains, which is relevant to us. And there's a whole heap of people with ones and numbers at the start of their handle, but I've typed S for Shauno, so I don't know how that works. So if I type the H, one ticks, 21st C scribe, 50 sheds of grey, academic say, Adrian underscore Belushi, there's a whole heap. The A for Shauno, A underscore L, and there's a whole heap of other ones that I've never even heard of, never tweet. Ask a Geek Gal, might have to follow that one, who knows. Let me see. Alternative Gift comes up. Dad Unmasked, Dropout Nation, Gay Book Marvin, Lady Bits and Bobs, all these people I've never even heard of. N for Shauno. Dad Unmasked, Dropped Out Nation, Shauno Cripps, Sean Elliott. Shauno, there you are, finally.
There you go.
So I've had to type in S-H-A-W-N and then scroll across my list, and then finally there you are. And then I complete it by going, oh, and there's only you.
Well, that's good at least.
But it's just strange how that comes out. All these people that I've never even heard of that are nothing close to your name, but Twitter thinks I want to tweet them.
Yeah, it does the same thing to me, and I don't know what the thinking is there. I guess, I don't know, maybe it does have something to do with how popular the accounts are. But it would make more sense if it would look at the accounts you're following first as opposed to suggesting ones that you've never heard of. But it does that to me all the time.
So it's very interesting. Anyway, Shauno, it's been fun. Looking forward to seeing you in February and, of course, interacting with you in the meantime.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me on, Eric. It's been good times.
And I hope that everyone has enjoyed episode 450 with IrkPod. This will be the last episode that you will actually hear. I was going to say live, Shauno, but that's probably a bad word. In close to real time, I'll be doing lots of recording, but not a lot of editing and uploading until I get back to Australia to start that process off in March. But if you follow me on the social networks at IrkPod and on Facebook, facebook.com/channelIrk, that's my personal profile, you'll be able to listen to all the audio boos. I know, Shauno, you will be, so that's one way to keep in contact via the trip.
Yeah, I will be following along for sure.
And we'll fade to black, and I will see you next time. Happy New Year, everybody, and yeah, I'm looking forward to lots and lots of travel. This is Irk on behalf of myself and Shauno. Good night, Interweb.